Hi there. My name is...
Hi.
How's that thought? My name is Ela Edgar. And who are you?
Beats the heck out of me. I'm Charles Feldman, and this is...
Trust on Purpose. So today, we're going to talk about a pretty juicy, interesting topic. And I'm just going to say the topic and the behaviors that we see with coaching clients. And actually, I'll say secretly, but it's not really secretly because I'm speaking to all of you right now. Some of my former behaviors around people-pleasing and the impact that that can have on our relationships, specifically around trust. So today is a juicy one.
Yes. Not all of you listening out there may see this in yourself. I know many people who don't consider themselves people pleasers, and some of them have made that assessment accurately. Others haven't.
Mm-hmm.
They are, in fact, often engaged in trying to please other people for various reasons, just aren't really copping to it. But there are certainly people who are not people pleasers. So today we're talking to and about those of you who are.
And I think, although we may not feel that we are people pleasers, I would guarantee that everyone has some sort of relationship with someone in their life that they have assessed to be a people pleaser. So whether we are on the behaving end or the receiving end, I think we can all relate.
Yes, absolutely. Suddenly someone came to mind in my life who is just exactly that. And it has an impact.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've listened to some of our other podcasts, probably have heard us say at least a couple times that probably, in my estimation, 80 to 90% of the situations in which someone observes someone else's behavior in the workplace particularly and makes the assessment that whatever that was that they did, it's kind of untrustworthy. That behavior, that action does not engender trust. It does the opposite. It creates a little bit of distrust, maybe a lot of distrust. But that 80 to 90% of the time, that behavior comes from a place of lack of awareness, lack of attention. The person doing whatever they're doing is simply being how they are. They're being their habitual self, and they're not necessarily aware of the impact that that has on the people around them, particularly regarding trust.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to start from that place and take a look at what it is that people-pleasing in particular does in regard to trust.
I'll add in our conversation before the conversation, and I think this is also my former personal experience as a recovering people-pleaser, that I was always coming from good intention. I wanted to help. I wanted to do things. I wanted to XXX. I was always coming from, although I wouldn't have named this back then, but I know now I have a strong value of generosity. I give freely with time, energy, resources, spare change, whatever it might be. So it was always coming from good intention. But what I wasn't paying attention to was the impact that it had. So yeah, let's unpack that a little bit.
Yeah. So what is the impact? And I think I'm going to tell one story, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
One client that I worked with some years ago, she was a manager. She had, I think, a team of 6 or 7 people working for her. It was a very busy little team. They had a lot to do. And she got a lot of value out of pleasing other people. And one of the ways that she did that, one of the behaviors that she enacted very often as a way of pleasing other people was to make offers. Oh, I'll help you with that. Oh, give me that. I'll take that part on. I'll do this. I'll do that. The problem was that she couldn't do it all.
Mm-mm.
And these were people mostly that she did this with were the people who reported to her. And so one of the first things that I heard from her direct reports is, we can't trust this person. We can't trust our leader. So when I could break it down a little bit, what I recognized was they couldn't trust that she would follow through. Her reliability, trust in her reliability was very, very low because she was making offers out of her sense of wanting to please, be generous with her time and whatever. She wanted to help. And yet the result was that her people didn't trust her because when she made the offer, at least initially, when she would make an offer, and they accepted it, one of them accepted it, the person who was accepting it, her direct report, held it as a promise on her part,
right,
on the boss's part.
Right.
Of course, she just promised to do this. She just promised to do this for me. And then, sure enough, her boss, 9 times out of 10, wouldn't follow through. So here we have a person who, good intentions in a sense, I guess, good intentions, wanting to please, wanting to help, creating great distrust.
And not realizing it.
And I think that's the key there, is not recognizing it, realizing it.
Yeah.
So what are some of the other ways that you see people pleasing, generating distrust with your clients and other people that you interact with?
So this is a little bit about personal experience, and I have observed this behavior in others that I have worked with, other leaders, where there isn't even a request or an offer made, that one just simply sees something that needs to be taken care of and jumps in to fix it. Maybe it didn't need fixing. Maybe it did need fixing, but it actually wasn't a priority right now. And I think one of the biggest lessons I learned in that domain was in jumping in and taking care of things for other people, I was removing their ability to ask for what they needed, to learn how to make clear and complete requests, or even if they knew how to make clear and complete requests, I just didn't give them the opportunity.
Yeah.
Because I was too busy. Oh, look at all of these things that need to be taken care of. Of course I can do that. Yes, I'll do that. So I see this, and I'm reflecting on a client that I'm working with right now, not for profit, really incredible, incredible work that they're doing and an incredible cause. So, so, so important. Yet in the conversations recently, so many of them have taken on, whether it's request, offer, or something that they just see as a need, but their ability to follow through, be accountable and reliable is diminishing. Because how do you possibly keep 87 balls in the air all at the same time and not drop one?
Actually, that reminds me of a client I worked with a few years ago. And so I'm working with the leader. And originally or initially, he came with the complaint that there was only one person on his, what, 8 or 9 person team, senior leadership team, who really got it and who was really doing the work. The one person was doing 80% of the work. So we had some conversation about what he did in response to this. And he said, well, I want to reward that person. I want to reward that person as much as possible. He's my go-to guy. And because I was working with him and his team, I had conversations with other members of the team, and the other members of the team both felt they could see that he favored this one particular person. And so they didn't trust that. What does that guy have that we don't have? Because he wasn't being real clear about why he favored this particular person. But during the course of working with him and his team, this star began to take on too much, just like you were talking about. And his star began to fall because he started to miss deadlines.
Mm-hmm.
He was able for a while to at least do the things that the CEO wanted him to do. But eventually even that became impossible. And so things started to fall apart all around.
Mm-hmm.
It's exactly like what you're saying. There was distrust of the boss and why he was so focused on this one person and thought this one person walked on water and the rest of them were hopeless. And then the fall of the star from the sky, the star player from the sky, and the disillusionment around that and the burnout. That poor guy, he had just run into the wall.
I am thinking of a few different clients, similar situations where highly competent, their capacity was enormous and what they could deliver and what they could take on was phenomenal. And they got a payback, right? Look at what I can do. Look at what I can produce. Sure, I can take more. Yes, I can do that. No matter who you are, how you're performing, at some point, you're going to hit the waterline where now actually I don't have any more capacity. But I think there's a missing piece with it. And I'm thinking about one leader in particular where they just kept taking on more and more and more. They were past the breaking point, but didn't know how to say anything to say, actually, like, I'm full. I can't take on anymore. So combination between continued people pleasing, I'm acting the way that I always have. I've been known and have been recognized for producing enormous amounts of work and having enormous capacity. But I've hit. And now, and I'm thinking about the distinction between that people-pleasing, I can, to my tank is empty. I can't do this anymore. And it can happen in a nanosecond. It can happen with one tiny more request where we emotionally, physically, mentally just go, oh my gosh, I can't do it.
Speaking of distinctions, I want to just see if there's a distinction between people-pleasing. Oh, I want to make you happy.
Mm-hmm.
And that need to prove oneself in the world by taking on more and more and more. Not so much that I'm trying to please the boss or my colleagues or the people who work for me, as it is wanting to see oneself as the champion, as the best, as the can-do person.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that you're saying that.
I think there's a distinction there that's important to make clear.
I'm wondering, and this may be another conversation, but I'm wondering where and how they've learned those behaviors.
Yeah.
When did people-pleasing become part of? When did pushing and striving to this point of enormous capacity, where did we learn those? And I think for many of us, especially in our remote world, in our world of fast and faster, that practice of pausing and reflecting and assessing, is how I'm behaving and performing working? Are my behaviors building trust with those I care about? Could there be something that's causing breakdowns in my relationship that I'm not noticing because I'm not paying attention?
Yeah, to a great extent, I don't think it matters where it came from. It's, can we recognize it?
Mm-hmm.
And once we've recognized it, can we begin to change it? And I think you just put your finger on a piece of that for many people, including myself, because the conversation before the conversation, I was talking to you, Hila, about a time when I wanted to please someone who was very close to me. And in order to do that, I had to promise to do something that I really couldn't in the end follow through with. Mm-hmm. But I really wanted to please this person. And so I said what she wanted to hear. I told her what I thought I knew, in fact, would, in the moment, would please her at the surface level.
Yeah.
When it came down to doing what I promised to do, I recognized that I couldn't for other reasons that were deeper. And so I went back on the promise that I had made, which created a huge rift in trust between myself and, well, this is talking about my second wife and I, which we did eventually heal. And, but you know, to do so, we had to go below that surface level. I had to get below that surface level, and so did she, and have a conversation about what's underneath that. Pleasing on the surface is all fine and good, but who are we as human beings underneath that?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in the work setting, we don't really often encourage each other to do that. We don't encourage each other to, when we notice someone else having the people-pleasing behavior and recognize that, I don't trust that behavior. I don't trust that person's what they're doing. And so I'm wondering if I can trust that person at all, recognizing that and encouraging them to take a look, giving them the feedback that they need in order to see, oh, this is getting back to that courageous conversation around, or maybe series of conversations around, hey, you know, I don't trust what you're doing. And in order to change that, here's what I think would help.
Those conversations are so important when we drive from care. I care about you as a person. Here's what I'm noticing. Here's the impact. I think that's also part of the not just self-reflection, but for the sake of why am I having this conversation with someone? What do I want to produce, or what's the outcome I'm looking for by coming from a place of care with this person?
Yes. And that's important to have that other person's trust in the domain of care. If I have some feedback for you that I think is valuable for you, mm-hmm. and you trust that I actually have your interests in mind, mm-hmm. that I intend good for you, then you're going to be much more willing and able to listen to what I have to say, and vice versa.
Absolutely.
So having built that trust to begin with, I can say, if you were someone in my world who was, and I can think of a couple of people right now who actually are in my world and who are people pleasers and who I don't trust because of that. I don't trust that what they say to me is totally sincere. And there we go with that domain.
Yes.
Of trust assessment.
Yes, yes, yes.
I don't believe their sincerity. I don't trust their sincerity because I know that very often what they're saying in order to, in their mind, please me.
Yeah.
And in order to have that conversation with them, I will have needed to build a sense of care, their trust in my care about them.
Yeah. Oh, I would also really like to unpack a little bit from our previous, the conversation before the conversation, this concept of fixing and helping.
Yes. So people pleasing is one set of behaviors, one habitual way of being in the world. Helping is somewhat different. And fixing, helping and fixing.
Do you have that quote handy?
Yes, here it is. Okay. So I'm reading from a book called The Five Invitations, Discovering What Death Can Teach Us About Living Fully by Frank Ostasevsky. It's one of my favorite books. There's so much wisdom in this book for me. And so here's a little couple sentences he writes about helping. The attachment to the role of helper goes deep for most of us. In this case, I think he's talking about those, you know, the helping professions. If we're not careful, if we become wedded to this role, it will imprison us and those we serve. But let's face it, if I'm going to be a helper, then somebody has to be helpless. This is the big elephant in the room, because helpers help. And in fact, they help tremendously. You look at anyone who's a caregiver,
mm-hmm.
the caregiving, I have several friends who are in the caregiving profession. In fact, a very good friend of mine, Edward Smink, wrote a great book called The Soul of Caregiving. It talks a lot about that whole trap and the burnout that can come from that as well. Mm-hmm. And the distrust, again, that can be created because I'm trying to help beyond the point that the other person, I'm taking away, I'm making them helpless.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking across all aspects of my life and how I could see that showing up. Absolutely, it could also happen in the workplace. There's so many places where I'm going to help you, but in order for me to do that, I'm assessing you to be helpless. I need you to be helpless so that I can help. And as I say that, like, there's kind of a bit of better than.
Oh, yeah.
A bit of ego, a bit of what's the other word I'm looking for? And it kind of feels pretty vile in my mouth right now to say that out loud. And again, I think people don't necessarily do that with the intention of, I'm better than you. Rather, they see something, they think they can help, they do help with good intention. But what's the impact of the behavior?
I kind of see the helping way of being when the helper looks at another person. They see them as down, as more helpless than I am. And people who have the people-pleasing way of being tend to look at the other person as bigger than them, as stronger, as more powerful than them. So they have to please them to keep in their good graces and keep things going well and smoothly.
I'm so glad that I could actually see you for that. So the kind of looking down, helpless, hands are out, whereas the pleasing was like, I'm looking up, my arms are lifting up, like I'm going to please you. That distinction, you just nailed it for me. Thank you.
Well, and then there is the eye to eye. And as, again, Ostasevsky talks about in his book, service, being in service to others.
And the word that pops into my head right away is also dignity.
Yes.
No matter your situation, no matter my situation, I can sit eye to eye, heart to heart, and be in service of you and hold you with dignity.
And the reverse of that, I can accept that service because I know that you see me with dignity, even if I'm somehow weaker or more vulnerable or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
I can see that the service is something that is truly valuable to me and that you're offering it with respect, with love, with dignity.
With care.
With care. Yeah. There are many ways that we can habitually act without awareness. Certainly without awareness of the impact that it has on others' trust in us. And I think that it's really valuable to just kind of put these out there and allow ourselves and each other, others, to think about, am I one of those perpetual helpers? Do I constantly need for my own sense of well-being to help other people? Am I a people pleaser? Do I constantly need to please others? Because if I don't, they won't think well of me. They'll think less of me. And what the damage that does to trust in the workplace and at home and everywhere else, really, but particularly in the workplace, because that's where so many trust breakdowns happen.
Mm-hmm.
I want to just, again, go back to that 80 to 90% of the people who are just doing what they do. They're doing we. I should include myself in that because certainly I've been that way and probably will again many times. We're just doing what we're doing. We're not aware of the impact it has on other people and particularly on their trust of us and giving them some grace, extending some grace to them, some empathy that, yeah, we're all human.
Absolutely.
And at the same time, to the extent that we can, helping them see it. So when I'm the recipient of people pleasing, having the capacity to say something about it in a way that the other person can hear. If I'm the recipient of overhelping, being able to, I say this and kind of laugh, and I trust my wife won't get too upset about this because she knows she's a helper. And I'm the recipient of overhelping, and I'm beginning to think that she doesn't trust my capacity to do things by myself, which annoys the heck out of me. These are places that can be pointed out. I can help her see that in herself. I can help the people pleaser see that in himself.
Yeah.
And vice versa. I can accept that from others, that feedback.
There definitely was a point for me in the height of my people pleasing. I knew deep down that I was people pleasing, and I would add, hustling for my own worth. That in order for me to be valued, appreciated, seen, I needed to do all of these things. The tipping point for me, when I knew something had to change and I really started to look at my behaviors, and is this the way I want to continue to behave, is I was freaking exhausted all the time. And the things that mattered to me never got done because I was too busy delivering on all the people-pleasing things that I had put ahead of me. I'm saying this with gentleness and kindness and compassion for whoever is listening and whoever this is resonating for, that you know probably deep down there's behaviors that are serving you, and you get to decide, we get to decide, I get to decide, do I want to continue this way? Or are there small tweaks and adjustments that I can make, not only for me to have a more fulfilling and satisfactory life, but to also build relationships where that's not a requirement. It's not an expectation. Rather, I can be seen, heard, and valued for the delicious human being that I am.
And what I hear in that, that I just absolutely love, is deep self-compassion.
Huge.
To be able to recognize that, see it, say it. Thank you, Hila. Mm. Thank you for sharing that. And thank you for a wonderful conversation about a topic that I hadn't really anticipated and is very rich. We'll be back with you in 2 weeks with another topic. In the meantime, if you have something you'd like us to explore, to unpack, if you have a question for us, if you have a challenge for something that we've said, we'd love to hear from you. You can email me at charles@insightcoaching.com or Hila at
ILA@bigchangeinc.com.
Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.